How's it going, everybody? Brian Alvarez here on Wrestling Observer Live. We're here for the next 2 hours talking pro wrestling and mixed martial arts. Tons of news to talk about today. Last night, the Strikeforce show from St. Louis. Main event, Alistair Overeem beat Brett Rogers, setting up a possible match with Fedor Emelianenko later on this year. We're going to talk about last night's show. We'll talk about that potential main event and what it says about Fedor if he does not accept that challenge. It was a big show last night, leading to some other big events coming up later on this year. And also last night, something you don't see every day. There was a pay-per-view scheduled. The main event of the pay-per-view fell apart, as has happened before in both pro wrestling and mixed martial arts. And for a number of reasons, the entire pay-per-view ended up being canceled. We'll talk about that. Give all the details about why the show ended up being canceled. It was more than just a main event being axed from the show. And we'll talk about some other instances in history where that has happened as well. This afternoon, the TNA Sacrifice pay-per-view, the annual pay-per-view where everyone in TNA needs to make sacrifices regarding their matches at the show. And it is, in fact, a match show where I think only one match has somebody making some sort of sacrifice. But still, we're going to run down all of the matches for that show. We'll give you a quick preview here. Show's going to be starting right after this program goes off the air. So if it sounds good to you, head over to pay-per-view and check that one out. We'll talk all of the matches. Also talk the Impact show from this past Thursday night, the quality of that Impact show, and we'll talk about the rating that the show did. We were talking a lot last week. In fact, we made some predictions here on the air. What happens when Impact moves from Monday back to Thursday permanently? Do they return to their old 1.1, 1.2 ratings, or do they do sub 1.0 ratings, which means that they have, in fact, eroded the audience for Monday night? We're going to talk about what that number was, what it means, and a lot more. We'll talk about some cuts coming to one of the major promotions. A big star who's been off TV for a month is already coming back. We'll talk about that. The changes to NXT. The show wasn't great on Tuesday night, but it was a very newsworthy show. Three eliminations. We'll talk about that. Tomorrow's Raw with the Bret Hart versus Miz battle. Funny story relating to that and what may end up coming out of that match there. And we've got news on TNA tapings, a WWE star undergoing surgery, Jeff Hardy's trial, and a lot more. Tons of stuff coming up today. We're going to take your phone calls and emails as well. We'll be back in just a moment, joined by Mike Sempervivi to talk all of these stories. You're listening to Wrestling Observer Live here on the Sports Byline Radio Network. We are back here on Wrestling Observer Live. Brian Alvarez here from WrestlingObserver.com, joined as always by Mike Sempervivi, also of WrestlingObserver.com. And by the way, for those of you that are subscribers to the website, a new edition of the Adam and Mike Big Audio Nightmare going up a little bit later on this afternoon, so you can check that out. But today, we got 2 hours of pro wrestling and mixed martial arts to talk about, completely free here on the Sports Byline Radio Network. And Mike, last night, you had scheduled the DVR to record the Shine Fights pay-per-view, headlined by a boxer versus MMA battle. It was Ricardo Mayorga, who at one time was actually a pretty big-name boxer, going up against former UFC star Dean Thomas, and that was the main event of the show. And you went out for the day, you came back home, you turned on the TV, and the first thing you saw was, event canceled!
Yeah, I went to an amateur boxing event during the day, and it was the Baltimore Boxing Club. It had a show, and I went to that, and I came home for, let me take a nap for a little bit. I'll get up. I had the DVR already paid for and set to get the fight. Turn it on, and it's the, well, I guess what would be in the cable industry, the blue screen of death. It was just the in-demand screen, basically flat out saying the entire Shine pay-per-view has been canceled. Now, there were obviously issues leading up. Last week, Don King had put an injunction in to stop the show from taking place. Now, how this whole show has been hyped up is basically Don King's deal is, well, I own the career of Ricardo Mayorga when it comes to boxing. You guys have done nothing to say that this is anything other than a boxer going in to face off against an MMA guy, And this is not uncommon. This happens in with contracts a lot, and figured, okay, well, they will settle with Don King, and that will be the end of it. This show will go on, and there'll be no problem whatsoever. Then the injunction goes through. It's supposed to be ruled on this past Friday. Mayorga's got no representation there, so it ends up getting held off and pushed off until it's going to be ruled on Saturday, the day of the fight, at 12:30. Well, Don King's judge in Broward County, Florida, where he had went to, the event was taking place in Fayetteville, North Carolina. He went to a judge. He got an injunction. The judge upheld it. Shine said, well, we're going to run the show anyway. The judge said, I wouldn't do that if I were you. And they canceled it off again. Even though the Mayorga-Dean Thomas fight wasn't going to happen, we at least had an entire rest of a show, including, I think, Azevedo was scheduled on the card. The semi-main event of Ninja Hua was going to face David Heath, which there's a story beyond that, too. But it ends up being that none of these fights take place. They canceled the show altogether. It was a move that wasn't made by Shine. It was made by the North Carolina Sports Board because of some other issues that apparently have taken place. Today in the one of the Fayetteville newspapers, Frank Zaccaro, the director of sales and marketing for the Crown Center where the event was going to be held at, basically just called the whole thing a comedy of errors. And I guess they were supposed to have a doctor on hand. I guess he was not there. There were decisions that needed to be made. But because the head of the Shine, the CEO, Devin Price, was down in Florida having to deal with this injunction, nobody could make decisions. So they went ahead and just scrapped the show altogether, which, even though it has happened in the past, it is very rare for something like this to take place. But as it looks, I mean, again, even if the Mayorga-Thomas fight didn't happen, there were obviously so many other problems that were taking place leading up to this that this show was going to be a disaster anyway. How Heath had gotten the spot is because Travis Galbraith, earlier on this week, pulled out of the show. His side was asking for his travel itinerary for weeks. He had only gotten it 3 days in advance. He had gotten his contract. He was supposed to have two cornermen assigned. He was only set up to have one cornerman. So he figured, you know what? I'm not even going to bother going to this show. I'm pulling out just because these people are not going to live up to their contract. So even if this show was going to take place, it did look like it was going to be a long night no matter what.
The whole thing, is, as you noted, was just a complete disaster. I mean, apparently the judge decided that although this was an MMA event, and anybody who steps into an MMA event is an MMA fighter, his feeling was that this show was being sold on MMA fighter versus boxer. And as a result, Mayorga was going in as a boxer, and that was breaching his contract with Don King. And then, of course, as you noted, they had legitimate things that needed to be taken care of on Saturday in order for the show to run, including the doctor on hand, and I believe some of the purse money for the fighters. And the guy in charge of that couldn't do it because he was in court. And as a result, because he could not be there to do this personally, they canceled the entire show. So, a disaster in every conceivable way. And I guess they've claimed this is not the end of the promotion. They're going to run again later on this summer. We'll have to see what the main event is going to be, because I would presume that Ricardo Mayorga is not going to be in it. And it's a sad story for everybody involved. There's always a part of me, and I guess this comes from all of the stupid things that I've seen TNA do in the past. There's always a part of me that just thinks, you know, I realize that your lawyers probably told you that it was fine for Ricardo Mayorga to fight on your show, but if in the end it was not going to happen, somebody should have figured this out earlier. And I guess,
well, here's the thing, too. At the heat of press conference, I mean, you obviously know that this is in his contract. You know Don King can be litigious. For Christ's sakes, Don King sued a VFW hall because a bunch of guys would throw money into a hat. And technically, they weren't paying the right amount of money to watch a Don King pay-per-view one time. This was a story, in fact, I think it was less than a year ago. So, you know, the dude does sue. So knowing that, at the heat of press conference the month before, he's, you know, Mayorga's talking about he's training with Rosendo Alvarez, you know, a boxer, just to make sure he knows he's going to hit hard. There was nothing, there was nothing leading into saying, hey, you know what, this is Ricardo Mayorga's first MMA fight. It was played up as boxer versus MMA guy. Why even take that risk? It was just stupid.
We're going to move on and talk a little bit about the Strikeforce show last night from St. Louis. As noted in the opening, the main event saw Brett Rogers completely destroyed at the hands of Alistair Overeem, the Strikeforce heavyweight champion. And Brett Rogers, I mean, the man was, he was legitimately manhandled. He was legitimately thrown around. Alistair Overeem grabbed him and threw him onto the ground. That was his takedown. And then he got on top of him and beat the crap out of him and got the ref stoppage. And, of course, afterwards, he challenged Fedor Emelianenko to a match, which, of course, is the biggest match that Strikeforce can put together at this point. And at this point, it's looking like the Fedor side really isn't big on taking this fight. And your thoughts on them balking at this, and do you think that by the end of the year this fight will take place?
I wonder if Fedor's side goes all Floyd Mayweather and says, well, you know what, you passed the commission test, Alistair Overeem, but we've hinted this before with you. We're going to want blood testing. We want Olympic-style testing. That's the only way I can see him trying to get out of this. I mean, there's no other fight, unless he goes into the UFC, there's no other fight for him to take. So, I mean, I know that his side is not big on bowing to public pressure of any kind. They just do things their own way, but what other fight is there out there? The pressure is, I mean, CBS, I don't know, if people that would be backing MMA that work for CBS would be pushing for this hard. Scott Coker's got to be pushing for this hard. Everybody involved should be pushing Fedor's side very, very hard for this, because what else are you going to have? You know, what else are you going to do? I mean, I think it's a little bit ridiculous that he's going to be fighting on Showtime coming up here soon. You know, again, not on CBS. So that, again, that makes absolutely no sense. It's the only fight that they have that you can say is a big money fight and a big CBS ratings grabbing fight. And, you know, for everything that has been poked at and needled at and said about Alistair Overeem from the time you watched him at Pride at 205, flat out, he passed the test. Obviously he has. So that means he's clean. So Fedor's got no excuse. Unless you're going to go into the UFC, or unless you're going to go to Japan and just stay there and go away forever, here's your only fight, make the fight.
We're going to run down the entire Strikeforce card here in a moment. We'll talk about that. Then we're going to jump into the TNA pay-per-view for later on tonight. The Sacrifice pay-per-view, a show built around sacrifices in which only one match actually has really anything at stake, other than titles,
sacrificing
obviously.
$40.
You're sacrificing your $40. That's right. Sacrificing your $40. We're going to talk about that after the break. Take your phone calls and emails as well later on in the show. You're listening to Wrestling Observer Live here on the Sports Byline Radio Network. We are back here on Wrestling Observer Live. Brian Alvarez here from WrestlingObserver.com, joined by Mike Sempervivi, also of WrestlingObserver.com. Here for the next hour and a half, talking pro wrestling and mixed martial arts, taking your phone calls and emails on a variety of subjects. And, of course, talking about the Strikeforce show from last night, the potential Alistair Overeem versus Fedor Emelianenko fight, which pretty much has to take place by the end of the year if Fedor wants to, I guess, get out of 2010, with people still ranking him as number one. And I don't know about you, but I'm not a fan of MMA rankings for a number of different reasons. But I will say that every time I see heavyweight rankings and Fedor is ranked number one, I don't know. There's something about it that always, I never agree with it, because I feel that there's a level of competition that has to be taken into account when you're doing rankings. I mean, the one argument I hear more than any other is, well, Fedor is unbeaten, except for that first blood stoppage loss years and years ago. It's like the year 2000. Aside from that, the guy's undefeated. And I always think it's more than being undefeated. I mean, there are other heavyweights that are undefeated. Herschel Walker is undefeated. You know what I mean? You got to take into account the level of competition. And to me, Fedor in the last several years has not faced a level of competition that is going to make him an easy pick for the best heavyweight in the world. What are your thoughts?
Yes, And I guess the defense that you can make is, well, you know, he beat Krokop, I think, twice. He did beat Nogueira when Nogueira was probably at his, you know, peak physical condition. But, yeah, I mean, when you do look at the wins, you know, him slaughtering TK and Naoya Ogawa and Kevin Randleman and guys like that, it's just, yeah, it's... And especially with the way we've seen what has happened with those guys coming over to the States and seeing how they fared. I mean, it is tough. It's getting to the point, though, with inactivity that Brock Lesnar is going to pass him. I can still understand people putting him number one pound for pound in the world. Absolutely not. I know there's people that still do that, too. I mean, no. As a heavyweight, yeah, you can actually kind of say that for right now. It's just... It's just very soon people are going to go buy him. It's almost like Roy Jones Jr. when he was in his prime, and even Floyd Mayweather Jr. That's why so many people started putting Manny Pacquiao up ahead of him, or at least making it 1A and 1B in the pound-for-pound ratings, was because of the fights he put on and the competition he would face. So it's again, I can understand it, but frankly, it wouldn't surprise me, and it doesn't bother me if I were to see Lesnar and Carwin and even Nogueira again and guys like that ranked ahead of him, just frankly because of the competition that he's faced. And that's, you know, and there's a problem with Strikeforce, too. Used to make fun of UFC's heavyweights a couple years ago when they were at their, you know, prime with guys like Wes Sims and Tim Sylvia and guys like that up there, and Arlovski for that matter. And they're talking about the possibility of doing Arlovski and Brett Rogers again. And I mean, really, does anyone want to see that?
No.
It's too bad for Arlovski that he lost so poorly last night, because he's one of their few guys that people actually would care about watching. And if it's not over after last night, he's only got one more shot.
You know, I could say partially from personal experience, having done a lot of training, and also just from watching the results of fights, to me, when you're doing rankings, and I can't believe I'm still talking about rankings, it's really, MMA is a sport where, to me, it's all about, what have you done for me this year? I mean, yeah, Fedor beat a lot of guys, a lot of really great guys, and Fedor was undoubtedly the best in the world for several years at the beginning of this decade, and even in 2005 and 2006, as you noted. But in mixed martial arts, in this sport, you don't face top competition for a year, and another guy trains really hard and does face top competition for a year. I mean, the guy that's training and competing is really going to close that gap fast. And the guy who's not training and facing the best in the world, you can really fall off fast. I mean, it's anytime somebody looks at Fedor and is just like, well, look at his run in 2004, 2005, and 2006. And I'm thinking, that's 4 years ago. That's like three lifetimes ago in MMA. I mean, we've seen a lot of guys that were extremely good, and they go into the cage, and just one day, they don't have it anymore. And it happens to everybody, and it could have happened to Fedor. We don't know. I mean, he's still pretty young, especially when comparing to Randy Couture, but still, I mean, you know, I don't know. I don't want to... I mean, obviously, I think if you put him in the cage with Alistair, I mean, he would obviously be the favorite just because he's Fedor and he still does have that aura, but anybody can beat anybody on any given day. And, you know, Alistair is the biggest threat to Fedor in many, many years. And it's going to be interesting to see if he takes that fight. The main event last night, the Overeem Rogers match, man, Brett Rogers. It's like Brett Rogers did a pretty damn good job with Fedor in their fight. He I don't want to say he almost finished him, but he had him in a position where some referees may have stopped the fight. Obviously, this ref wasn't going to because it was Fedor, but Fedor survived, ended up winning, but he took a beat in that fight. This fight here, I don't know if it was because of how intimidating Alistair Overeem looks. I mean, he's a giant, jacked-up dude. He physically looks far more imposing than Fedor. I don't know if it was that or what it was, but he came out for this fight, Brett Rogers, and he looked like the dude at Sam's Club against the world champion. And that's literally exactly what happened in this fight. And, you know, Alistair mentioned I've been in, you know, X number 40 fights or whatever, and you're still new and that sort of thing. And Jesus, was that guy right? I mean, this was like, man, this was just a one-sided whooping. And I think it was more, I think a lot of it had to do with the fact that Rogers felt like he was in over his head, but man, that was something else last night.
That, and it was all over his face when Overeem did throw him across the ring, and it was just, you know, when he got on top of him, you could see it all just sapped out of Brett Rogers that, you know, it, and Overeem, you know, who has fought in K1, who's used to, you know, throwing around guys like that and having to slam into guys the size of Mark Hunt and Gary Goodridge and guys like that. I mean, yeah, the experience level, and just the sheer physical level. Because there were, I mean, Brett Rogers, I think, weighed in at like 260. He was right at the limit.
263, I think.
Yeah, and he probably put on even a couple more pounds, too. I'm sure after that. It was just Overeem's big, huge, massive physical dominance. And he's going to, again, we don't really know, because look what Overeem's done in his last couple of fights. I mean, realistically, not like he's been knocking out a who's who of top competition either. So, again, there's been a little bit more shine put on him after tonight, but we'll see what happens. It's the only thing that they have right now, because, really, I don't know if anybody wants to see, after Fedor and Verdum, which is a very interesting fight. I mean, does anybody want to see Bigfoot Silva against either one of these guys, or frankly, any of the other heavyweights that they do have? Not really.
Bigfoot Silva destroyed Andre Arlovsky. Well, it was a three-round decision, but he clearly won the decision, dominated the fight. But
how does he afford a Dolce & Gabbana robe? That was actually quite impressive coming in the ring with that.
I don't know, but it sucks to be Andre Arlovsky. I don't know what you do with the guy. I mean, he's been badly exposed in his last several fights, but people still love the guy. We had the Jacare Souza against Joe Villasenor, and Jacare dominated the fight all three rounds, although he couldn't submit Joey Villasenor, which actually is a hell of a credit for Joey. And after he could not submit him, he got tired in the second round, and at that point, Joey did a lot better for himself, but still, he was taken down repeatedly, and Jacare won the fight, but not a real impressive performance from Jacare Souza. We had the...
No, and I tell you what, the thing with that, too, is I guess, I don't know what it was with the two judges that actually had given Villasenor the third round. I think it was just kind of like a fight achievement award at the end. Was like, you know, okay, yeah, you got taken down five times in the second round and seven times, but you know what, you keep popping back up again, so we're going to give this to you.
Well, you know, I didn't score it that way, but, I mean, if somebody...
I thought he got swept.
Okay, let me say this. I'll say this. I would not have judged it that way. But if a judge told me Jacare took the guy down, the guy was able to avoid every submission he tried and stand up and start the fight over again on the feet. So really, he achieved more by negating Jacare's takedowns and submission attempts. I would accept that far more than a judge telling me that I don't count leg kicks. That's just me.
Yes.
We had Roger Gracie, billed as the golden child of MMA's first family from London, take on Kevin Randleman. And Randleman was like 5'8.5". Gracie was 6'4". It was a man versus a pterodactyl is what this was. He couldn't get in there. He couldn't do a guy. Couldn't do a thing. And Gracie just jabbed him to death like Nick Diaz, sort of. And then when it got to the ground, he put on what I thought was just the meanest choke you could possibly put on, a forearm right across the windpipe. And Kevin Randleman tapped. The referee didn't really see it. And so he had to tap again, and the referee finally broke it up. And poor Randleman was virtually unconscious. And I guess a big win for Roger Gracie, but he's now, I guess, 3-0. He fights very, very rarely. His stand-up is rudimentary. great with submissions, but I don't know what his future is really going to be either unless he works more stand-up. And we'll get Mike's thoughts on this fight when we come back from the break. Finish wrapping up the Strikeforce review, and then we'll get into TNA. Take your phone calls and emails as well. You're listening to Wrestling Observer Live here on the Sports Byline Radio Network. We are back here on Wrestling Observer Live. Brian Alvarez here from WrestlingObserver.com, joined by Mike Sempervivi, also of WrestlingObserver.com. And for the latest pro wrestling and mixed martial arts news, always head to WrestlingObserver.com. We've got daily news updates. As soon as this show ends, we're going to have live running play-by-play of the TNA Sacrifice pay-per-view. If you don't order the pay-per-view, you can check WrestlingObserver.com for all of the results of the show as it takes place. And, of course, if you love this show, head to WrestlingObserver.com. Scroll down the right-hand side of the page. There's a list of our latest three free radio shows. Download them all. Put them on your iPod, your MP3 player of choice. Listen to them on the way to work or at the gym, wherever you may be. And if you love the shows and you want more, consider signing up. $10.99 per month. And for that price, you get 15 to 20 brand new radio shows every single week. 15 to 20 shows a week. And in addition to that, we have an archive with every single show we've ever produced dating back to 2005. You can go back to, say, May of 2006, download every show for the month, listen to it. I've been told by people that have tried to listen to every single show that we have archived that it took them well over a year to do so. So sign up for a month. No way you can go through all the content. And if you like what you hear, you can continue signing up and get much, much more. So check it out, WrestlingObserver.com. Back to the news here. The only other fight to talk about on the show last night was the Antoine Britt versus Rafael Feijão fight. Ended very quickly via knockout, the highlight of which was the referee, an old guy with a gray beard. When Feijão knocked him out, he leaped in there and dragged him off, almost choking him out in the process. I thought that was the best thing on the fight right there.
The only way it would have been funnier is if that ref, Al Wickers, I think was his name, suddenly Feijão just stepped back and he went Cecil Peoples style, like barreling over and then just like face first right into the cage, right into the camera.
What was that ref's name?
I think it was Cecil. Didn't Cecil Peoples ref a fight? Or the one last night was Al Weechers, I think his name was.
Al Weechers. The best part about him is everybody has a catchphrase, like John McCarthy has, let's get it on, and guys have this and that. And this old guy is like an old skinny guy. And he brings the guys to the middle of the ring, and he says, are you ready? Are you ready? And then he goes, fight! And I thought, more guys need to do that. Maybe it's just me, but...
Actually, that's one thing I miss from Pride, is Yuji Shimada with the judge, fight!
Yeah. I also like the judge that said, are you ready? Are you ready? And there's a long pause, and then he looks over and he goes, where's my bell, man? And then they rang the bell. Live TV, everybody. Live TV. All right, let's talk about the TNA pay-per-view. It's coming up later tonight. It is the TNA Sacrifice show. They've done a pretty poor job hyping up this pay-per-view. It's one of those shows where, I mean, if I really think hard about it, which I don't like to do, I can remember some of the matches. But, I mean, in general, it's like if you ask me to rattle off all the matches off the top of my head, I still probably couldn't do it, but it's coming up tonight. It's on pay-per-view, and the TNAWrestling.com website has the lineup. I'm trying to pull it up right now, but the website is being very, very slow. So I think the main event is AJ Styles versus Rob Van Dam for the title, and they had a match on TV, which was pretty damn great, and so hopefully this rematch here is great as well. And I don't expect a title change. They're very happy with RVD as champion. So, should be a good match. RVD retains. And, I mean, one great match, you're probably not going to have a bad pay-per-view as a result. But this one at least should be good.
There's four pretty good ones, I think, maybe at least. It's just, you know, Mr. Anderson and Jeff Hardy... Okay, that's the one you have the hope on, that it's going to be good. But if it's good, that's going to make you feel all right. The Motor City Machine Guns, 3D and Beer Money, that should be pretty good. And Kazarian and Doug Williams should be pretty good, too. So it's at least, if you're holding out hope for those four, it will make up for the fact that the Desmond Wolfe Abyss match is so convoluted and stupid. Orlando Jordan and Rob Terry, because, well, and then Madison and Tara, because there's another one, too. And I know Hall and Nash get to defend their titles against Inc. And, well, the, like I said, the hope is that Mr. Anderson and Jeff Hardy bring up the entire level the rest of the night.
Let me tell everybody something about TNA. I know that people that are new to this show and have listened to me ranting and raving think that I'm biased against TNA or whatever. If you go back and if you go to the website and look in the archives of the newsletter that I do, Figure Four Weekly, and you look back to like 2005, 2006, 2007, you'll find a lot of praise for TNA. Like a lot of praise for TNA. And part of the reason for that is because there was a period several years ago where when we talk about this pay-per-view and we talk about how it should be a good show and we hope it's a good show and this and that, there was a period where every TNA pay-per-view was good. Every single one, almost without fail. Like, when there was a TNA pay-per-view, you just knew it was going to be good. And the reason for that is because the people in charge, and it was largely Scott D'Amore that was doing this, he would put together a pay-per-view by saying, all right, we got eight matches here. What are the eight best matches on paper that I can put together? And they would set up a pay-per-view, and then they would work backwards a month, and they would set up all of those matches so that at the pay-per-view, you had a card that was strong on paper and ended up being strong in execution. And actually, the best business that TNA ever did, and more so than they're doing with Spike TV on Thursdays at 9 p.m., Spike TV Mondays, head-to-head with Raw, the best business they ever did was during that period where they set up great cards on pay-per-view and worked backwards, because they trained their fans to know that if you spent money on a TNA pay-per-view, they would deliver. And unfortunately, now it's all about, okay, let's write next week's show. Oh, let's tweak the show right before we go live. Oh, let's make some matches here. And thus, it's very, very hit and miss. And I think it's obviously one of the reasons why the TNA pay-per-views nowadays are actually doing less business than they were doing in 2005, 2006, 2007, when they had much, much worse national television than they do now, at least in terms of the time slot. So hopefully this show is good, but for TNA to grow, this is the same thing with WCW and WWF back in the day. In order for TNA to grow, they've got to convince fans that you're going to get quality every single time out. And they're still not at that period. Hopefully this show is good. AJ and RVD, as noted, should be a great match. Sting and Jeff Hardy should be good. They're both old school workers. I don't know. I can see this one being really good, and I can see this one being not so good. It really depends on the crowd. It depends on how much time they're given, what kind of finish we got. I don't even really know what the match is even all about. I mean, I know Sting is a heel. Jeff's a babyface. I guess there was that thing with Hogan a couple of weeks ago where Sting and Hogan had a stare down and Jeff attacked Sting. But, I mean, they didn't even have Sting or Jeff Jarrett on the show on Thursday, the go-home show. That's astounding. And that's a semi-main event. So, I don't know, but how you don't have those guys on TV, I mean, that would be like the go-home show before WrestleMania, for example, not having Batista or John Cena on the show. It makes no sense.
And that's the biggest problem with the TV show. I mean, because, again, still what's continued on through TNA is always the fact that if you go to their house shows are great. And like you were saying about the pay-per-views, that's how they used to be. It's just the TV. It's just not a good TV show. Continues to not be a good TV show. I mean, the rating came out, I guess I was a little bit closer than you were. I thought it was going to be an 0.8. I think you thought it was going to be a 1-1. Well, it's an 0.9. And it's still better than being on Monday, and hopefully they haven't eroded everyone away. It's just that if they can make the TV more compelling and just stop with so much stupid, it'll be fine. And that's, it's just, it's the TV.
Here's a fun fact about the house shows, by the way. The house shows are not put together by the booking committee. They've got a, I don't know who it is, I forget, but someone not involved with booking the TV puts the house shows together. And until like about a couple of weeks ago, Eric Bischoff had never been to a house show. Vince Russo has still never been to a house show. And keep in mind, they've had house shows minutes from his home. He is not gone. So that tells you why the house shows are so great. And hopefully now that Bischoff has gone to a house show, he doesn't decide that he needs to take over booking of the house shows too, or they're, that's going to be trouble. But
well, I thought he was burned out as it was.
He's Ink Inc. versus Scott Hall and Kevin Nash. I'm just going to move on. This match should be terrible. I like Jesse Neal. I think he's way better than he should be given his level of experience. Shannon Moore is fine. Hall and Nash, I just don't know. I don't know. You would want a title change, but are they going to really do it 3 days after they change the title on TV? I don't know. But that's the match there. Matt Morgan is off the show, so sucks to be him.
Now, wait, now also, too, when it comes to it, they decided yet, is the band a three-man operation where Eric Young can fit in at any time, or is it all a Nash?
Well, we'll find out tonight. It'll probably change many times.
The free band.
The free band, yes. Doug Williams and Kazarian should be pretty good. Kazarian is really hit and miss for me, but Douglas Williams, I love, both on the mic and in the ring. I mean, not like main event star yet or anything like that, but I think for the level on the show, he's one of the best guys they've got, and I think he'll get a real good match out of Kazarian, so that should be fun. And Desmond Wolfe faces Abyss. Get this match.
This is just so stupid, it's not even funny.
If Desmond Wolfe wins, he gets Abyss's Hulk Hogan Hall of Fame championship ring. Because you see, Chelsea wants a ring really bad. But she doesn't want a diamond-studded ring or a ring with made of platinum and gold. She wants the WWE Hall of Fame ring that Hulk Hogan used to have. What woman wants to wear that around? Not to mention, can you imagine the work involved in resizing that damn thing?
Well, yeah. And not only that, she wants the ring so bad that she will keep sending her man into combat to get that ring. So why would she agree then or have any interest in wanting to be put up as collateral by her man? So if she doesn't win the ring, then she goes over to Abyss.
Yeah.
If Abyss wins, why?
If Abyss wins, he gets Chelsea for 30 days. I always love that.
When Jimmy Garvin did this with David Von Erich, it worked. When it's happened some other times, it's worked. Why do I just not see this working with TNA?
Because you know it's not going to work.
I know.
I always love the idea of you get the girl for 30 days. It's like, what does that even mean? I mean, at least when it's worked successfully, there have been funny vignettes involved. And I just don't think we're going to get funny vignettes here. I think we're just going to get, she comes to the ring with the guy, stupid stuff happens, and then more stupid stuff happens.
Hey, can you wash my mask and flannel?
That's right. Orlando Jordan, Rob Terry, global title should suck. Actually, Orlando's been all right of late, but I still don't have high hopes for this particular battle. But I guess we'll see. Probably won't get a lot of time, so it won't matter. Tara and Madison Rain, that will definitely suck. For the Knockouts title versus Career. Tara apparently is leaving, which would suggest she's going to lose this match. But there are people that think that either A, they're going to put the belt on her anyway, because that would be a great swerve. Or B, she's not really leaving. She's re-signed. They're swerving everybody. In which case, does anyone really care? Of all the people to do this with, Tara? So anyway, we'll see what they do. I can't even say I care. I'm just intrigued about, are they really this crazy? That's really my question here. And then finally, Beer Money, Motor City Machine Guns, Team 3D. We'll get Mike's thoughts on both those matches when we come back from the break. That is a TNA pay-per-view sacrifice coming up after the show ends here, live on pay-per-view and ongoing play-by-play at WrestlingObserver.com. We'll talk about it a little bit more after the break. Phone calls and emails as well. You're listening to Wrestling Observer Live here on the Sports Byline Radio Network. We are back here on Wrestling Observer Live. Brian Alvarez here from WrestlingObserver.com, joined by Mike Sempervivi, also of WrestlingObserver.com. Here for the next hour, pro wrestling and mixed martial arts. Mike, we were talking about the Tara Madison Rain match and Beer Money, Machine Guns, and Team 3D at the TNA pay-per-view tonight. Your thoughts on those two matches?
I'm still trying to wrap my brain around the match that Tara had with Taylor Wilde and Sarita a couple weeks ago. As soon as the match starts, she spits on Sarita, which I just, like, why didn't she just walk in there right there and just start kicking her in the face? But it doesn't really matter. She slammed Soja out of Times Change. She beat up Taylor and slammed her in the stomach repeatedly with her knee brace, which, yeah, you know, Baby Doll didn't scream that much when Jim Cornette hit her with a tennis racket, and then Dusty Rhodes came out the next week and said she'd never be able to have children again. And you know what? I would just much rather that they got the rights to something, or maybe just linked up the cameras to a YouTube and they played that in the space of these matches, because Madison Rayne and Tara, no, I don't want to see that whatsoever. And I don't care what happens to Tara's career. No offense to her. She's got a fine pizzeria in Louisville, I've heard. It's got to be good. But Beer Money, Machine Guns in 3D, you know, I'd be happy if 3D wasn't involved in it, but we'll see.
Somebody just asked, can you guys fantasy book tonight's pay-per-view for a moment? Tell us what TNA needs to have happen tonight to get a good pay-per-view and get back on track with shows as good as they had the last 5 weeks. My God, is that a loaded question. Maybe we'll tackle that
that could go on for a bit.
Yeah, we'll tackle that one a little bit later on in the show, perhaps. I'm never a big fan of fantasy booking. It's not even fantasy booking that needs to be done. It's just, I actually explained a little bit earlier. Set up a good pay-per-view on paper, get what you know will be good matches, and create a card, and then work backwards from there. It would be very easy to do for the next pay-per-view. Just set up who you want to wrestle that you think is going to be good, and then work backwards and build 4 weeks of TV leading up to that show. It's really not hard.
No, it's a quick and easy one. It's Ink goes over Hall and Nash. The Guns go over Clean in their match. The Guns bounce around for Ink because they're your new cool tag champs. And that's how you roll with things.
We'll be back in just a moment. Got another hour of the show coming up. You're listening to Wrestling Observer Live on the Sports Byline Radio Network. How's it going, everybody? Brian Alvarez here on Wrestling Observer Live, here for the next hour, talking pro wrestling and mixed martial arts, joined, as always, by Mike Sempervivi, also of WrestlingObserver.com. Mike, the TNA rating from this past Thursday night, we'd both done some predictions. You, of course, predicted a 0.8. I predicted a 1.1. I actually had thought that since there was only 1 week where there was not a Thursday airing, and I know that I talked to people in WWE who said it doesn't matter if they go back to Thursdays because we normally watched it on Thursdays anyway. I thought that half the audience was watching on Thursday, half the audience was watching on Monday. They just had split the audience, and that when they got rid of Monday, all those folks would go back to Thursday night and just watch it there. And as it turned out, no. Showed it a 0.93. Much, much lower than they'd been doing on Thursday nights before moving to Mondays. And all I can say is, maybe there were people that started watching on Monday night, stopped watching on Thursday. They tuned in this past Monday, found the show not on, didn't know what to do, and forgot to watch on Thursday. And that this coming Thursday, they'll be back again, and it'll be back to the 1.1. Perhaps that'll happen, but not a good sign at all that after trying to go head-to-head with WWE, they eroded the audience to the point where now they're doing a 0.9. in a time slot where they had before been doing 1.1s and 1.2s. Not a good sign. What were your thoughts?
Well, I guess I'll have to, again, give it another month doing it. It's not like they pushed it so remarkably and incredibly hard, you know, every possible place that they could, that, no, you know, it's going to be back to Thursday and really cram it down, you know, people's throats. So, yeah, I can see it going back up to, you know, around a 1. I think those people will come back, but hey, look, there's legitimately people that probably just went, you know, again, they could afford to miss the show. If it was on, they watched it, and if they don't, you know, I'm sure there's a little segment of people that have been like that, too, so they're just going to have to wait and try to earn those people back again. But I can see one happening this week, at the very least, you know, going to be around the same, which I don't think they can complain about too much. As long as they're going to hover and at least keep the people, that's at least more than anything else that they can ask for. As long as it doesn't drop, they should be semi-satisfied.
Tomorrow, of
course.
Because
obviously they need to retool the whole thing, and if they have changes being made anyway, you know, it makes sense.
Tomorrow they are taping TV. We're going to talk about it after the break. They're taping 3 days of television to cover all of the programming leading up to the next pay-per-view. This is not a good idea. We'll talk about why after the break. You're listening to Wrestling Observer Live here on the Sports Byline Radio Network. We are back here on Wrestling Observer Live. Brian Alvarez here from WrestlingObserver.com, joined by Mike Sempervivi, also of WrestlingObserver.com. Here for the next hour, talking pro wrestling, mixed martial arts, taking your phone calls, talking the news, emails as well. And of course, for more, you can always head to WrestlingObserver.com. We're going to be doing live running play-by-play of the TNA pay-per-view coming up immediately after the show goes off the air. And we got some news to talk about here. Tomorrow, TNA is taping 3 days worth of television, actually 4 shows in 3 days, and it's going to be all of the TV leading up to the next pay-per-view. Now, in the past, this was kind of a disaster, but not a complete disaster, because they'd have an idea for 4 weeks of TV, they'd tape it all in 3 days. Sometimes you'd see goofiness, like Christy Hemme would interview a guy, and then 5 minutes later she'd interview another guy, but she'd be wearing a completely different outfit because it'd been taped for a different day, but they decided to edit together for the same day. Now, it's going to be a big problem, because under the Hogan-Bischoff regime, TV tapings are much like they were in the mid-90s for WCW. And by that, I mean that they would basically be going live in the Monday Night Wars. And so there would be changes being made to the script. They'd be changes all the way up to the time the show went on the air. There'd be changes made as they went on the air. And when you do TV like that, it's really hard to tape 4 weeks of television back to back, because you end up making all of these changes, and it ends up with shows that, because you've taped so far in advance, there are a lot of faux pas on the television. In fact, there was one on TV just this past Thursday where they did a deal where I believe it was Inc. talking about their upcoming tag team title match at the pay-per-view, and it was taped backstage, and as they were talking, you could hear Douglas Williams' music playing, and on the TV, Douglas Williams had one, or I guess the Douglas Williams music was playing before the Outsiders had won the titles on TV, so that was a very obvious faux pas there. We're going to have more of those coming up as well, and Mike, your thoughts on taping 4 weeks of television leading up to a pay-per-view all in 3 days?
And some tells me, unlike the days of like wrestling at the Chase in St. Louis, where they would tape like 2 and 3 shows at a time, that they're not going to spend the time to go back in and do cut-ins and things like that. It's always interesting to see what happens if somebody were to get hurt on a house show. You know, you tape, you know, a month out, and somebody breaks a leg or something like that, so it's not even like you could just hide it and cover it up. No, there's going to be changes that have to be made for the pay-per-view that it's going to be built around. If that's what you got to do to save money, then that's what you have to do. I would be more of one of those people that, how many corners can we cut to keep this thing live and keep this thing fresh and going and being able to look at, I don't know. I'm a far bigger fan alive, but if the money being cut back is that significant, I guess you can't say too much. It just, as you were saying, it can cause real problems, and it causes faux pas, and for a company that's had a lot of these things, it just was one of our big hopes, or at least one of my big hopes, when Bischoff and Hogan went in there, and it's been up and down with this, of dumb little errors like that, you know, like having a promo for the next week, on what's going to be coming up next on TNA before the main event even happens and things like that. So it's just, again, it's hard to have full confidence in them being able to pull this off without too much, you know, foolishness taking place. And again, those results get out. I think it does hurt them a little bit. I mean, it's hurt Ring of Honor when the fan base started to turn with them. If you hear a show is not going to be all that good, you're more apt to go, let me skip it and I'll figure out a way to watch it later if I didn't miss anything.
Tomorrow there's also going to be the first of what may be a couple of rounds of budget cuts. I know people have talked about this before, and we have as well, that there was a period where I can't say they were making money. I mean, the best I can say is they were not losing a lot of money. You have to realize that in the first 4 or 5 years of TNA's existence, they lost millions of dollars, like $30 to $35 million to get this thing off the ground. And there was a period before Hogan and Bischoff came in where they had finally reached the level where they were not losing money. Now, granted, long way to go to pay back the $30, $35 million they lost, but at least they weren't piling losses on top of that. Of course, then they brought in Hogan, Bischoff, a number of big names, and they're not making money. They're losing probably tremendous amounts of money again. We don't have any sort of money figures, but when you look at all the people they brought in, it's actually very similar to WCW there near the end, where they would complain that, you know, all these guys are on guaranteed deals, we're losing money, it's these guaranteed deals we never should have signed. And of course, if you look at the history of WCW, which, cheap plug, I did in the book Death of WCW, which is available at Amazon.com and find booksellers everywhere. If you look at the history of WCW, I mean, those guaranteed contracts were being paid in 1996 and 1997. And they were making so much money that they more than paid for every single one of those guaranteed deals. Guaranteed deals are not bad when you're making money. Guaranteed deals are bad when you're not making money. So now, the question in WCW there at the end was, how are we paying for all of these contracts? The answer was, you're not. You are not making any money on house shows. You're not making any money on pay-per-views. So you're losing money in all these guaranteed deals. Now, the question for TNA is, it's the exact same thing. I asked the question, where is all this money supposed to be coming from to pay for these Jeff Hardys and RVDs and Hulk Hogan's and all these guys that they're bringing in? The answer is, they're not making any money. They're not covering all of these contracts. They're losing money yet again. So, gotten to the point where it's time to make budget cuts. And in fact, we may start seeing some budget cuts apparent on tonight's pay-per-view. We will be seeing budget cuts as of tomorrow's TV tapings. And it's sad. It's sad that guys are going to have to be cut, because you look at people like Awesome Kong, and she was cut. Well, obviously, the Bubba the Love Sponge thing was a part of it, but, you know, her and Gail Kim and people like that were cut because TNA didn't want to give them an extra $100 per shot. $100! Meanwhile, there are people like Christy Hemme, mind you, that are making over $100,000 per year. So, it's a very sad state of affairs in WCW. There are a lot of people very upset about the way things are going down, and I guess
in TNA, you mean?
Yes. Did I say WCW?
Yes.
It's the same thing. A lot of people unhappy. It's the same morale problems we saw in WCW, but it'll be apparent tomorrow what's going on.
And, yeah, like you said, just too bad, you know, in this whole time of, you know, because it's always the guys with the guarantee contracts that, you know, when it comes time to go, Jesus, how are we going to pay these things? You have to let the other guys go that you should have been building around and doing some things with the whole time, not to say that. And again, somebody offers me a guaranteed contract, of course you take it. You know, from the wrestler's point of view, you know, I just take the money if they're going to give it to you. But, you know, all of those promotions in Georgia that happen to be there, there's, you know, Charlotte is obviously still does not mind going to see wrestling. There's all of these ways you could have been building up guys over all of this time, too, and that's the biggest. Again, when it gets right down to it, what did they ever build? And it's just frustrating because, again, like we always say with TNA, nobody wants to see TNA fail. It's just too bad that they are.
To the phones, you're on Wrestling Observer Live. Who is this and where are you calling from?
Hey, Brian and Mike, this is Alex Goff. Hey,
Alex.
First I'd like to make a comment. I went to the Ring of Honor show last weekend in New York, and quality-wise, probably the best wrestling show I've ever been to.
Really?
Yeah, I mean, from Eddie Edwards to Chris Daniels, Tyler Black and Roderick Strong, the Machine Guns and Kings of Wrestling, I went into it with high expectations, and I have to say, like, they definitely met it and exceeded it. It was a really good show. And then my second statement is, I was just wondering how bad do y'all want to see Alistair now beat Fedor after last night? Because Rogers is a guy that I guess makes other guys look really good, but I guess he's like a jobber in that sense. But Alistair, I really want Fedor to lose because I get tired of his gimmick of being unbeaten, and I really want to see him get beat. So I hope Alistair's the guy that can do it.
Well, I'll say I want to thank you very much for the call. The thing with Fedor and Alistair is I really want to see the fight. Can't say that I really want to see Fedor lose. I mean, I really, to be honest with you, I don't care either way. It would be great if Fedor beat him because he would answer a lot of questions. And if Fedor doesn't beat him, then hell, Alistair Overeem beat Fedor, and he's young, and you want it, I mean, if someone's going to beat Fedor, you'd prefer it to be a young guy who can go several years. It's just like pro wrestling. You know, you don't want a guy who's 45 to end the Undertaker streak. You want a guy who's 19 and can go and go for years afterwards and make a name off of it. And we'll talk to Mike about this when you come back from the break. We've got to head to a break. We'll be back in just a moment. You're listening to Wrestling Observer Live on the Sports Byline Radio Network. We are back here on Wrestling Observer Live. Brian Alvarez here from WrestlingObserver.com, joined by Mike Sempervivi, also of WrestlingObserver.com. Caller in the last segment asking about Fedor and Alistair Overeem, and he really wants to see Fedor lose. He's sick of the unbeaten gimmick. And Mike, do you care who wins that fight, or do you just want to see the fight?
I just want to see the fight. I hope it's a really good fight. I mean, you know, obviously we've been watching Fedor for so long, it's, you know, if he wins, great. It just adds a little bit of a legacy more. And, you know, of course, then the problem is after that, what do you do? But, I mean, you can say the same thing with Overeem, too. Okay, he wins. What is he going to do with the title? I mean, really, how long has he been Strikeforce champion now, you know, anyway? You know, whatever happens, Strikeforce has got to do a better job with, you know, making sure these guys are going to fight in the States and they're going to fight regularly enough where you can be on CBS or a possibility of a pay-per-view and have it planned out where, and again, it's always going to be the problem with it or with M1 that they are allowed to get in the mix. But, you know, for their sake, I hope it's Overeem. I mean, he speaks English. You know, he's a big, impressive, good-looking enough guy, a figure that you could prop up there. So, you know, from a business point of view, if I'm Strikeforce, honestly, at this point, I would probably rather have Overeem win because what the hell has Fedor done for you? Again, not as much, obviously, you could say the same thing about Overeem, but really, what has Fedor gotten you?
Let's do a couple of the email questions here. This person wants to know, how come you don't give reviews of the ROH TV shows on here? I know a lot of people don't see ROH. But it wouldn't hurt to give like a 3-minute review of it. Well, ROH TV, I review every week in the newsletter, in depth, actually. I realize this last week was an exception. I didn't get the show in time. But I do review them every week in the newsletter, so you can check that out, Figure 4 Weekly. And as far as on this show here, I usually don't watch them until Sunday night or Monday anyway. And the thing with ROH TV is, it's pretty much always just a good wrestling show. I mean, there are not a lot of angles on the show. I mean, mostly when we review shows on this program, we talk about the big angles coming out of it and how it leads to pay-per-views and that sort of thing. And ROH is not doing a lot of pay-per-views. They've got one coming up in June, an internet-only pay-per-view. I believe June 16th is the date. But not a lot of angles and such shot on the shows. We may review some of it here on the program here and there. But, Mike, do you get HDNet?
I don't. Hopefully my Comcast. Hopefully I'm part of that package with Comcast. So I'll be able to pick it up pretty soon, I'm hoping at least. And that's my biggest problem. We'll review it a lot on the Adam and Mike Big Audio Nightmare because we'll just have to get a chance to watch 3 or 4 of them in a row because I don't have HDNet, so I have to gather them up from other people to let me borrow or try to watch them online, and I just don't get a chance to. But hopefully, if Comcast holds out for me, we're going to get a chance to see it at least every week. I'm going to look forward to watching it every Monday in its first run when it's on, because, and this is going to sound kind of like a backhanded compliment, but it doesn't make your brain hurt. But when you get done watching Ring of Honor, you know exactly what it was that you had just seen. You know, no wackiness, no confusing. It's just, this happened, you remember it, you're ready for next week, you remember what happens when the show comes on the next week, and it's a very good TV show. And again, I'm a big fan of Mike Hogwood doing the announcing for it, too. So,
yeah, the Comcast rollout's coming up later on this summer, I believe. I think it's 5 major markets and might be more. All I know is when I saw the list of markets, it listed Seattle, which made me very happy because I've got Comcast and I don't get HDNet. So hopefully it comes to Seattle and a number of other places as well because HDNet's got a lot of great stuff. The ROH show on Monday night. They've got Inside MMA on Friday night. They've got HDNet fights. There's pretty much fights every Friday and Saturday night. So if you're an MMA or wrestling fan, HDNet is awesome. And
it's like Showtime. It's like Showtime for boxing in MMA. And there's another disappointing thing last night, too. Strikeforce, they never drive home their upcoming events well enough. They did a better job with the boxing stuff, which they should. That's part of the gig, but they got to do a better job hyping up their upcoming shows. Because they didn't. I don't think they mentioned at all the Challenger show that's taking place this weekend.
I don't think they did. It was a poor job of promotion on last night's event. But we're going to go to the phones. You're on Wrestling Observer Live. Who is this and where are you calling from?
Hi, this is Mark from London, England.
Mark, what's going on?
Not much. I was just wondering kind of what your personal thoughts are, or if you've seen anything from John Moxley, what your thoughts are, if you think he's kind of got any sort of future. Because I really like him, and I really think he's really kind of distinctive, and I think he's got a good chance of kind of going quite far.
I saw John Moxley at the Dragon Gate pay-per-view live. I'd actually seen him before that, and then I watched him at the pay-per-view down in, it was at WrestleMania weekend, so down in Phoenix. First time I saw John Moxley, he was doing an interview, and he appeared to be wearing, like, he was working at a gas station. He was wearing, like, this, I don't even know what it was, just, like, overalls with a name tag, and I was like, what are you wearing? And then I watched his match, and it was like, that was all right. And then I saw his match with Tommy Dreamer on the Dragon Gate USA pay-per-view, and you know, not like a blow-away match or anything like that, but the first thing that struck me was, my God, this guy is big. He was like a big, tall guy, and he's solid in the ring. I mean, I don't know how long he's been wrestling, but he's it wasn't until like Evolve and Dragon Gate that I really started to see a lot of him. And I think that if he continues to get experience, he's got decent size, and he's a decent enough worker that he could probably go to WWE or TNA and perhaps make something of himself. So I think I haven't seen enough of him to really judge, but I know that he's really starting to get over big on the indie scene. I mean, he won the FIP title from Roderick Strong. I forget that whole scenario. Just a couple of weeks ago. I'm pretty sure he did. But, I think he's got a lot of potential.
Yeah, because he's got that. And like I've been watching a couple of these kind of CZW matches because he's their heavyweight champion as well. And he's been doing a couple of kind of quite longish matches. And even without all the hardcore stuff, he's got, I'd say, a lot of potential. I think he can go quite far.
Mike, I want to thank you very much for the call. Mike, have you had a chance to see a lot of John Moxley?
No, I haven't, actually. And one of the reasons why is because of his being I don't watch CZW, so I haven't really had a chance to see him at all, but I'm looking forward to seeing him in Dragon Gate here a little bit, too. I know at least he trained under Les Thatcher, I guess, in Heartland. So, I mean, he's been going around now since, I think, like 2000, 2004 or so, about so is when he started.
This person says, Brian, you once said in your newsletter that Taker Lesnar from Unforgiven 2002 was the worst ending to a pay-per-view main event of all time. You gave it a whopping 1 billion stars, negative 1 billion stars. Do you still feel this way 8 years later? I don't remember. That was a long time ago. I'm sure it was horrible at the time. I think my big problem with it was that Undertaker should have put him over, or should have put him over, but he didn't. And then later on, he did. So it probably was the wrong finish at the time, particularly on a show that you're paying for and you're expecting a finish. But I don't know. I'd have to go back. I don't know what other horrible finishes there have been. And keep in mind, 2002 was before TNA did a lot of horrible finishes on pay-per-view after pay-per-view. So I'm sure there was one worse, but I don't know what it would have been. This person here says, in the time after La Resistance, but before the con man gimmick, Rob Conway had a confrontation in the back with a wrestler who had caused him problems. The thing about it was that Conway talked down to this wrestler with a tone and intensity that you would see from Steve Austin. Left the impression to me that Conway would be pushed as a badass that could talk, wrestle, and have a good look. WWE management then settled him with the con man thing. Can you remember this, and why didn't the company get behind Conway? Thank you. I don't remember that at all. Who did he... It would help if I knew who he was talking to, because I don't remember. I just know that Rob Conway, I mean, I saw a lot of him in Ohio Valley. He was a great worker. He had a good look. His interviews didn't blow me away, but they were solid interviews. And he just, I don't know. A lot of times WWE will take a guy, they'll kind of push him as a mid-card act, and then they'll decide that he can only be a mid-carder, and they'll think that he has no potential, even though that he does. And that may have been what happened to Rob Conway. I don't know. But I never saw him at the level of a Steve Austin or anything like that. I mean, Steve Austin, when people say, you know, he was just a tag team guy that made it big, I mean, people knew even when he was a tag team wrestler that he had the potential to be gigantic, and I never really saw that with Rob Conway, but Conway was way better than what you saw in WWE, and he should have gone a lot farther, but unfortunately they didn't see him like that, and it's too bad.
No, yeah, really, because maybe it was just all some sort of cosmic joke on Jim Cornette with Dinsmore and Conway and Basham and all of those other guys. But, you know, he was always a guy that it's just like, okay, well, he's not going to be a mega super rock Austin level guy. I just figured he'd be a guy that could be there forever because he looked good. He was pretty good. He had the cheesy smile on his face. He had, you know, they ended up giving him the world's greatest theme music for a short period of time. But it was just like, if nothing else, he could have been a guy that kind of got beat up and, you know, would get a win every once in a while, but then get beat up by a bigger guy. But I thought he was entertaining enough to keep around, and I'm not.
Uh-oh. We may have lost Mike. Mike, are you there? Mike?
Yes.
Oh, we'd lost you there for a second.
Where did it leave off in my Rob Conway rant?
It just, in the middle of talking about how he deserved better, you vanished.
Oh, well,
that WWE got
exactly
to you.
Much like all of those OVW guys, just even talking about them will get you knocked out.
That's true. This person says, in Death of WCW, mentioned that the World Tag Team Title Tournament at the beginning of 2000 was so much worse than the World Heavyweight Title Tournament the year prior, yet you go into a lot more detail of the latter's suckiness than the former. The latter. So I went more into detail in the World Heavyweight Title Tournament because that was the world title, which is hell of a lot more prestigious, or was supposed to be, than the tag titles. But knowing this, plus the fact that it's been some time since you've watched either spectacle, do you still stand by that statement today? I don't know. I'd have to look at that and compare to some of the TNA title tournaments. TNA tournaments historically have been almost as horrible or more horrible than WCW tournaments because the same guy is booking both tournaments and he has no idea what he's doing. So I know there have been some horrible TNA tournaments. I'd have to go back. Standards are lower today. So maybe if you transplanted some of these TNA tournaments to the 90s, they would have been the worst of all time. I don't know. And now
The WCW tag tournament where it was all they had were the Wyndhams and Guerrero,
Mike,
and it was just a big convoluted mess.
Hold on,
that.
We're actually right up against a break. Let me go to break, and when we come back, I'll let you talk about that more. You're listening to Wrestling Observer Live on the Sports Byline Radio Network. We are back here on Wrestling Observer Live. Brian Alvarez here from WrestlingObserver.com, joined by Mike Sempervivi, also of WrestlingObserver.com. And for the latest news and info in pro wrestling and mixed martial arts, head to WrestlingObserver.com. After this show is over, TNA pay-per-view starts. You can head over there. WrestlingObserver.com will have live running play-by-play of the show. If you don't order the pay-per-view, but you want to know what happens, head to WrestlingObserver.com. We'll tell you all about it. Plus, if you scroll down the right-hand side of the page, there's a listing of our three free radio shows, the latest free shows available on the website. Download them, put them on your MP3 player, your iPod, your iPhone, whatever you listen to your audio on. Head to the gym, listen to them in traffic, wherever you need your audio fix. And if you like what you hear, consider signing up. I was going to say continue to sign up, but consider signing up. $10.99 per month. And for that small fee, you get daily radio shows. We do about 15 to 20 brand new shows every single week. We had some great shows this past week, including a dual show with Mikey Whipwreck and Jim Mitchell, and another dual show with Steve Sims and Conan, talking Lucha and his career. There's radio shows up pretty much every single day. So if you love this show and you want more, consider signing up. You also get full access to our archive. Every single show we've ever done, dating back to 2005, there's thousands and thousands of hours of audio, thousands and thousands of shows up there for you to listen to. So check it out. It's only $10.99 a month for all of the radio that you could possibly want. It would take you years to listen to every show we have available. So head up there, check it out, start downloaded, and have some fun. We were talking about what were we talking about before I rudely cut you off there after the last segment?
Not rudely at all, because I didn't really want to think about it too much more.
Oh, the WCW tag tournament.
Tournament.
Yeah. What happened?
Well, I was thinking, actually, the one I was thinking of was 98, where they did, remember, it was like Rick Steiner and Kenny Chaos. There was a split in the teams, and somehow they became the tag champions because Scott Hall turned on the Giant, and then it was, they had Barry Windham and Kurt Hennig, Benoit Malenko, and there was an era there of just, it's like, if you wanted, I think it was Saturn and Raven would always be, if you just wanted to get rid of the tag belts, why they just didn't get rid of the tag belts, I have no idea. But I remember that was one of those weird tournaments that absolutely made no sense. I mean, at least when it comes to the TNA, they've had some dumb stuff. And the Hard 10 tournament and some of the other things that they've done have been really goofy. But with that said, I mean, I think it was like Medusa losing to Mang in the world title tournament. And just a complete mess of some of the stuff that they would do. But, yeah, just terrible.
I remember the world title tournament. It was like Medusa was not only in the tournament for the men's title, but she got eliminated and then ended up back in.
Yeah.
And you know, I shouldn't bury men versus women too badly, because the promotion I'm working for up here in Washington, the indie group, has been bringing in Maleo Saka. She's the women's champion, and I'm strongly angling to have a match with her. I really want to have one, so hopefully that happens down the road.
She's been around forever and has been just pretty damn unbelievably good for a long, long time.
Yeah, and I would rather have a match with her than almost anyone else in the company. So I'm angling for it here on national radio as well. This is how badly I want it. So we'll see what happens. This person here says, what's the deal with Randy Savage, Vince, Steph? Is it legit or BS? Well, that's a million-dollar question. I would say that I can count on one hand the number of people in the world that know what the real story is, and I'm not one of them. So don't expect to have an answer anytime soon from anybody, because nobody's talking and nobody is going to talk. So there you go. This person wants to know, there was an altercation between Jim Duggan and Matt Bourne at a recent indie show in White Plains. Is this real or a well-orchestrated angle? What have you heard? Well, apparently, the story I heard was they were supposed to have a match, and Jim Duggan was trying to put the whole thing together and tell Matt Bourne what was going to happen, and Matt Bourne felt disrespected because they've been in the business the same amount of time, and this led to a deal in the match where I think Hacksaw punched him in the face or something like that, or it broke down, and I don't know. I wasn't there. I don't know. The whole story is absurd. The idea of Jim Duggan and Matt Bourne getting into a fight in the middle of their match. I don't know why you would work something like this. Just the whole thing is just stupid on every level. So I don't know what happened, but that's the story. So that's the story.
I don't know. I'm kind of actually amused now to find out more about this, just to see exactly what that fight could possibly look like.
I'm sure it was a hell of a battle. Jim Duggan has got to be in his 50s, and I don't know how old Matt Bourne is, but probably late 40s. So,
Duggan was one of those guys that used to scare me. I used to watch Mid-South, and like he and DiBiase and Steve Williams, and there were Butch Reed, men punching other men hard in the face. It just, I don't think it's as impressive anymore now that with everything that the Hacksaw has been through.
I just remember the last several times we've seen Hacksaw wrestle, when he throws a punch, I mean, it's like, he does this big wind-up, and he lifts his foot high in the air, and he does a giant stomp, and it's like the goofiest-looking punch. And I just think, is that how he punched Matt Bourne for real, or what did he do in this battle?
And Bourne, if he did do it that way, and he was that Three Stooges with it, and he got hit so hard, Bourne bounced back into being in doink mode and took like that big bouncing bump and then fell out of the ring, and that's what caused the fight.
When I was younger, like in my teens, early teens, I did Taekwondo, and last year I took a kickboxing class during the summer, and I hadn't done this since I was a teenager. I got into pro wrestling, obviously, and so I did a lot of pro wrestling, and then anyway, I go back to the kickboxing, and it takes you a while to get back into things, but the first couple of times I hit the bag, I could not help but slap my own thigh to make a loud noise, because I'd done it for so long in pro wrestling. So I just wondered that, like, if a fight broke down with Jim Duggan, if he could help but get in position to do like the running clothesline, just because it seemed so natural after all these years. How do these things work?
Oh, yeah. You know, and by the way, too, speaking of you always were into individual sports. Another reason why that you are probably more against ratings than a lot of people, and ratings actually have gotten out of control and, you know, incredibly stupid over time, is that people in sports need to compare and contrast and go, who's number one, and do these things all of the time. In a way, I would rather see these MMA companies do what ROH is doing with, like, a pick six or a pick three. You know what? You knock off another guy, you're in that mix of talking about who the next guy's going to fight. You know, just having three guys or something like that talked about in the mix, that would be sufficient.
Yeah, here's my question for you about rankings. This is one of the reasons that it kind of annoys me. Number one, it's hard to do rankings when... I mean, how do you compare guys that fight in the U.S. to guys that fight in Japan? In U.S., you've got all these guys that cut 30 pounds to make a weight class. There's drug testing, which obviously some guys get past, but, I mean, you know, there are a lot of guys that they're clean on the day of the fight. In Japan, they're, you know, guys fight at or near their walk-around weight. There's no drug testing. Guys can be jacked to the gills. I mean, how do you even compare these things, number one? And number two, what does it matter? I mean, if you had something like pick six where, all right, these are the top 10 guys in the 155-pound division. Number one is the champion. Number two is next in line for the title. Number three is next in line after that, unless number three gets beaten by number four, in which case number four is going to become the new number three. If you've got stuff like that, then yeah, these rankings are important. But the biggest MMA organization in the world is UFC. And the rankings, whatever the independent rankings are, it doesn't matter at all. It does not matter at all if you're ranked number one, if you're in Strikeforce, because you're never fighting the UFC champion. It's just not going to happen. So, I mean, let's just say if I were a fighter, Brian Alvarez, and I was ranked number three, what the hell does that mean? Is that just... Do I get to put that on my Wikipedia? I mean, what does that really mean that I'm ranked number three? It means nothing.
Well, it says everything. I mean, Carol Parisian was his, an injury took him out of his title shot. What kept him out of the title shot up until his problems was nobody really wanted to see him fight. Gray Maynard is suffering with this problem. Everybody and their mother wanted to see Frankie Edgar. Of course they do. That's what the fight they wanted to see against BJ Penn. The same thing with Koscheck. I'm trying to, my brain locking right now on who technically should be fighting GSP. There's another case of it's just, they're to do business. When it comes to boxing ratings, that is the business. Putting a guy that shouldn't be there in a spot, and I think it's one of those things that has just carried over into MMA and into fighting of, you know, Pro Wrestling Illustrated and Ring Magazine style ratings from over the years, and people just feel the need to have to do that when realistically UFC looks at it as in the smartest possible way. What are we going to get people to care about and make them money? Because sooner or later the cream's going to stay at the top and you're going to get your title shot. But if they can get you out of the way for something else, it's going to be better for the company as a whole and maybe even for you better down the line. That's how it's got to be done.
I just remember, like, when Gilbert Melendez won the lightweight title, and he does that promo, and they ask him, well, you know, where do you think you are right now? And this is on Strikeforce. This is on Strikeforce on CBS. All the guy had to say was, I'm number one in the world. I'm the champion. Instead, he said, I feel like I'm top three. So, which begs the question to your average casual viewer. A, well, if you're the champion and you only feel your top three, what should I be watching to see the real best guy in the world? Because obviously he's not in Strikeforce. That's number one. And number two, what does that even mean, I'm top three? What does he get out of that? Nothing.
Yeah.
Absolutely nothing. So if rankings lead to people saying stupid things on national television, then they're more trouble than they're worth.
There's really nothing else more to add to that. I'm still, you bringing that up just, it boggled my mind again of yes. I don't know why anybody would actually say, just say, yeah, I'm the best in the world. No one's going to kick my ass, period.
What do you mean, what's my ranking? I'm the champion. I'm number one, obviously, Gus.
Yeah, you see this big shiny belt, you fool?
Yeah, what do you think this means? I'm third place? No, I'm number one. These people all need promo coaches, and Paul Heyman is available.
And no offense, and I like Moro and everything. Did the endings of those interviews last night just seem kind of like drawn out, like, all right, cut now? They just seemed very uncomfortable for some reason. And I don't know if it was Moro's facial hair or what. Just something was wrong about those.
This happens all the time in WWE, though, where they linger on a guy's face to the point of uncomfortable, and then they cut away. So can't say it's just Strikeforce. We got to do a couple of news notes here before we head to the top of the break. Jeff Hardy's trial has been postponed yet again. Second time it's been postponed. It's been pushed to June. I don't know what that means. What it means is either the defense does not feel like they have a good case, or the prosecution does not feel like they have a good case. And I guess we'll find out in June. But it's been pushed back twice, so he's free to work the pay-per-view here tonight.
If the prosecution doesn't have a good case, with what they had and what they said he had, there are some damn fools in North Carolina.
Well, there may be some damn fools in North Carolina. I don't know. I don't live there. What else do we have here? The Dragon Gate USA pay-per-view was Friday night. It actually just finished replaying. You can check the in-demand schedule to see if there's a replay. The main event, the six-man tag, is awesome. Awesome match. Dragon Gate six-man. It's great, great stuff. And the rest of the show, kind of hit and miss. Some of it's really good. Some of it's just all right. But it's only like $19.95, so if you normally buy TNA pay-per-views and WWE pay-per-views, it's probably a good value for the money. Kurt Angle is returning to pay-per-view, or he's returning to TV this coming Monday night. He was put out Actually, we'll talk about this one after the break. I want to talk more about this one, but we got to head to the top, almost the top of the hour break. We'll be back in just a moment with more. I need to take a break myself. You're listening to Wrestling Observer Live on the Sports Byline Radio Network. We are back here on Wrestling Observer Live. Brian Alvarez here from WrestlingObserver.com, joined by Mike Sempervivi, also of WrestlingObserver.com. We were wrapping up the news for the week. Last TNA pay-per-view. Of course, the next one is airing in just a couple of moments. You can follow it at WrestlingObserver.com. But in the last show, Kurt Angle beat Mr. Anderson and then announced he was taking some time off and would return to fight for the world title. It's expected he would take a several-month hiatus. In fact, he's already ready to return. He's going to be back tomorrow. So the guy is nutty, but we knew that already. Beth Phoenix undergoing surgery for a torn ACL. She'll be out of action for about 6 months. Dropped the title to Layla at SmackDown on Friday night. That's what happened there. Tomorrow on Raw, Bret Hart will be facing Miz, supposedly for the U.S. title. Bret sent out a post about a week ago saying he was unaware the match was taking place until his son emailed him about it. So they did not even talk to him about this match. It'll probably end up being an angle, and we may actually see the U.S. title win of Bryan Danielson tomorrow if Bret Hart ends up pulling a Miz and showing up with a, quote, doctor's note saying he cannot compete, but he's got a great replacement for Miz. And I hope I just didn't screw Bryan Danielson out of the title by suggesting that right there. But Danielson was booted off NXT because the week before he said he deserved to be cut, as did Michael Tarver. Skip Sheffield was also cut in the pros poll. And then Daniel Bryan cut a promo basically saying that Daniel Bryan was done, but Bryan Danielson was going to return, and he felt there were big things in store for him. So we'll see what happens with Bryan Danielson. Move to one of the main shows very, very soon, perhaps tomorrow, and hopefully we get some great things coming out of him. And that is it for the news. We got to wrap this show up. We're already out of time. Remember, check out WrestlingObserver.com for more. Dave Meltzer and myself will be back up later tonight with a brand new show only at WrestlingObserver.com. Talking the TNA pay-per-view and all the news in pro wrestling and mixed martial arts. A new Adam and Mike Big Audio Nightmare with Mike Sempervivi is going up as well. And, of course, head to WrestlingObserver.com right now for a recap of the TNA pay-per-view. We are totally out of time. Thanks, everybody, for listening. Thanks, Mike, as always. We'll be back live next week as well. You're listening to Wrestling Observer Live on the Sports Byline Radio Network.